Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guests are the co-hosts of the Girls Gone Wad podcast, Joy Parrish and Claire Cook. These ladies have done over 200 shows, interviewed tons of amazing guests, and so part of this conversation is just talking about what they've learned about themselves from their guests and through the entire experience of putting themselves out there to so many people. We go into topics like vulnerability, overcoming fear and shame, and lots of other things. Before we get started, I just wanted to give you a quick heads up. Next week on September 4th, we're relaunching our Brute Body program. And I know beach season is over, but we're right in the middle of the off season leading up to the Open. And if you need to get stronger or you need to change your body composition to compete the way you want to compete, this is the program to do it. So if you're interested, put this show on pause, go check out the website, go to brutestrengthtraining.com/programs/brute-body and get on the wait list. People on the wait list are going to get some free shit for signing up early. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, this is Mike Cashew. This is the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm here with Joy Parrish and Claire Cook. Ladies, it's late over here. I know you are super busy. Thanks for making some time to do this with me. I really appreciate it.
Michael, only for you.
Thank you. Thank you. This one's going to be a lot different than our usual shows, as I was kind of prefacing before we started. You guys on your podcast, the Girls Gone Wad podcast, talk a lot about some topics that are really important to me, like vulnerability and overcoming fear. And so I really want to dive into that, some of that kind of stuff here in a little bit. But first, you've done over 200 podcasts, so you've interviewed a ton of different, extremely interesting guests in the fitness and health industry. So I want to hear from both of you on this. What have been your biggest surprises that you've encountered about yourself, your guests, and even the process of putting yourself out into the world over the past couple of years?
We're diving right in, aren't we?
Yeah, we're just going right in. I'll answer this quickly. So realizing about ourselves, when Claire and I first started this podcast, I kind of feel cliche saying that, but there's really nothing that we expected coming out of this idea that we created together. So I think that was the biggest surprise, is that we look back now and the emails that we get every day from listeners is just, to this day, I just cannot believe that we've created such a cool tribe. So I would say that first and foremost is the community that's developed because of this podcast is just so phenomenal. I can't even explain it and put it into words. And then this was such a new territory for the both of us that even starting a podcast was just something we had no idea what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And creating we're on 209 episodes now. I think that was the biggest surprise, is that we could stick with something for this long. And Claire said it best, that if you had told us 3-4 years ago that we were going to do this consistently every single week for as long as we have, we would have been like, you're crazy. So, I think I've learned a lot too. I think there's a lot that goes into sharing your personal life with a lot of strangers, but the feedback that we get is just so positive that we keep following that feeling. And that's just the thing that we stay true to, is that we'll keep doing this as long as it feels good and as long as people continue to connect with us.
And I think too, definitely to echo what Joy said, like, you kind of just keep going with it. And every week we somehow find the time. And when we started 4 years ago, I had just gotten engaged and I'm now married with a toddler, and, you know, just our lives have changed so much in the process. And I think that kind of going along with that, the thing that I have, which, by the way, sorry if you can hear my toddler yelling in the background, my husband's trying to put him to bed and he's not happy with it.
I can't hear him. So you're good.
Oh, good. It's just like, I feel like everybody we talk to, even, you know, the most successful people in their industries and in their craft, the biggest thing that everybody always says is like kind of that same message of, if you had told me X number of years ago that this is where I would be, I never would have believed you. And we had an interview a couple weeks ago with Cherie Chan, and the way that she put it was like, you know, you just get up every morning and you do the best you can. And one day you look around and realize, oh my gosh, like, look what I've built. And that has been very true for us in this podcast. But I think it's also been interesting to me, like, how true that seems to be for anyone who's successful with anything they do, that rarely does somebody set out on day one to achieve a certain thing and end up exactly where they thought they would end up. And it's really just helped me think about the way that I define success and also the way that I strive for success.
I think I'm starting to hear this more and more, kind of this idea of people that accomplish really big things. They definitely don't always, but I'm finding more and more that rarely do people have a very clear vision of where they're going to go, like before, like when they start, right? And both of you were talking about, you had no idea, no expectations whatsoever about where this was going, but you kept honing your craft and doing the best interviews you could do and creating as much value for your listeners as you possibly could. And then here you are years later, having created this amazing tribe. Do you think if you would have known what it could have become, that it would have gone the same way? Like what would be the same? What would be different?
Well, first of all, I don't think we would have believed that. I don't think we would have believed that we have, you know, that this would be possible, because we're just, again, so blown away by the people that we have found through this podcast. But I think so much of it has to do with planting a seed. And I love what you said, Michael, just about the journey that we went on. If we had known the final destination or whatever, the point that we're at now, I don't know if anything would be different, but I definitely know that it just takes one step at a time that we're following the feeling and that we're following how great it is to do a podcast every week. And we do have so much fun and we meet such great people that is the important piece. And I think we do it so backwards with goals, right? We always think of like, I want to accomplish this, but really the magic happens in just kind of planting that seed and then going, all right, let's see how it goes. And that's kind of how we've been this whole time.
That's so cool.
And I also think like neither one of us feels by any means that we have, you know, arrived at our destination. This is still a project every single week. And I think if we had set out with a specific goal, I don't know that we would still be podcasting, because 4 years ago, we never could have seen where we would be now. And so maybe we would have said, oh, our goal is to do this for 50 episodes. Mm-hmm. Well, if that had been our goal and we had stopped, you know, we never would have done 75% of the stuff that we've, you know, been able to do. And so instead, just kind of taking it week by week. But also, you know, you do have to have some sort of guiding principle or North Star that you are pointing towards. And for us, it's definitely the community that we've built and, you know, just trying to always be kind of like, we try really hard to cut through the bullshit and we try really hard to be exactly who we are. And, you know, we both still have full-time jobs. Podcasting is not our life. We are not competitive athletes. You know, we have our messy lives and our messy marriages and our messy jobs. And we just try to be as real about that as possible. And, you know, I think if anything, that's the only goal we've ever had, is just to not be anything other than ourselves. And even like, you know, we sometimes talk about, actually a lot, we talk about what would it look like if this was our business. And it's like, would we be able to be as true to who we are as we have been if this was our source of income? You know, and I don't know what the answer to that is, because we haven't tried it, but it's always the question.
That is a very interesting question. I'm looking forward to what you guys figure out about that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that
I only laughed because we were recently on a podcast where they were really pushing us to do it, and we're like, ah.
That's funny. So that kind of leads me to my next question. On your podcast, you champion a lot of like really, really positive ideas and bring them to tens of thousands of women and men that, you know, have never heard of things like vulnerability and stuff like that before. And it's not a full-time job. And so really, what is it? What is in it for you, right? What do you get out of sharing this information? What do you get out of doing this podcast that doesn't pay the bills?
Wow, it's so much fun, Michael. And I think that you can probably relate to the projects, the passion projects that you have in your life too. And I think all of us have some type of, like, I guess they call it side hustle now, or the passion projects and all the things that we do for fun. I think it's just a different term now, right? Like in the past, we had, you know, certain hobbies that we did, or you took up, you know, knitting or whatever, which I actually used to do. I really did. I like for like 3 years, I knit scarves for like all of my friends. It was great. But I think that like this is something where you take up a passion project and you just have so much fun with it. And it has no attachment to your day job and it has no pressure, that you just do it out of pure joy. And I think that's kind of what we get out of it. But I got to say, I was really, I want to give credit. Like, this was not just something that Claire and I were like, oh, this is just this idea. Like, we were both inspired by different things that really brought this project together and brought this podcast together. Like, Claire was doing a blog full time, or, you know, fairly often. You were posting.
I mean, yeah, once again, it wasn't my job.
But not your job, but you're.
Yeah, you were podcast. I was blogging every day. And
yeah. And, yeah, you know, and so.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, so I'm just thinking like there were a lot of things that led up to both of us having the ideas and the creativity and the experiences that we had to then create a podcast. Like Claire was doing her blogging and I drew a lot of inspiration from podcasts that already existed. So, you know, I want to give credit to that as well. And then, you know, just developing the project in and of itself and doing the podcast, what we get out of it at the end of the day is just so much. We have so much fun doing it. Mm-hmm.
I think also like for me, I just get out of it. It is a creative outlet. Like I've always been a writer. This has really taken the place of writing in my life kind of for this season. But it also is just the humanness of it. And every time that I say something on the podcast that for me, you know, I wake up the next morning with a vulnerability hangover and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe so many people are going to hear me talk about postpartum depression or, you know, my marriage troubles or, you know, whatever the thing is that I've talked about that is freaking me out. And then the emails start to pour in of like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're talking about this. I went through it and I would have had somebody or I never, you know, whatever it is, like we've had messages anywhere from just like, oh my gosh, it's so relatable that you, you know, sit in the car for 10 minutes before you go inside because you need to decompress from your day before you can deal with your family, all the way to like, you made me realize that I had an eating disorder and I went into an inpatient treatment and you saved my life. And like, there's nowhere else in my life where I would get that type of connection. And so for me, that's really what keeps me going and that I get out of it is like just this ability to connect with people. Like the thing I always think about, my voice has been in countries and towns and homes that I will never be in. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's so cool.
I can relate to you guys so much. First off, from the fun sense, like selfishly, I get to have conversations with so many people that I really wouldn't have access to. And that I learned so much from. There's not a single podcast that I've done that I haven't learned something, you know, very valuable for my own life. So it's, you know, that part has been amazing. But then also, it's been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done because of the impact that some of these conversations have on listeners, right? We're talking about very meaningful stuff, vulnerability and getting through shame and fear and stuff like that. And the impact that that has on people is just huge. So it really, for me, you know, being in owning Brute Strength, we're very like, type A and goal driven and it's about competing and looking better naked and stuff like that. So this kind of, fills my cup, if you will, in like creating a even larger impact on people, which has been amazing for me.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And it's crazy. Like the world we live in, I know everyone kind of rats on social media and we have our own problems with social media from time to time, but it's, you know, really we're just in a time where you can connect with more people than ever. And I think with great, you know, kind of with great connection comes great responsibility in a way that if you are going to set yourself up as somebody who, you know, tens of thousands of people are seeing your post or hearing your voice, you know, I would hope that you would take the time to come to the table with something that's meaningful and intentional. And, you know, so I think that's also a part of it is feeling a responsibility for like, now that we do have this audience, we really want to bring value to that all the time. And, but through that, you know, there's a huge sense of fulfillment by being able to, like you said, you know, like you selfishly, you never walk away from a podcast thinking like, eh, I could take it. I could have taken that or left it. Like,
right.
You always come out of it with something cool. And so it goes both ways.
So Joy, this one might be more up your alley. So I started going to AA meetings when I was about 15 and I continued for the next 8 years. And in all of that time and all of my time in rehab and treatment centers, if not the biggest theme was this idea of being of service to others. And so how it relates to what we were just talking about is I think what you guys are doing is you're really serving others, because it's not paying the bills. You're not getting anything, you know, tangible out of it. But there is something to be gained from serving others with, you know, with nothing tangible in return. And so I'm curious what, cause you're a therapist by day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a thing or two about this. What is, from a psychological standpoint, what really happens when we get outside of ourselves and serve another person?
Well, I love that you asked this question. There are a bazillion happiness studies that will support that one of the best ways to boost your mood is to be of service to another person. And I'm not going to cite the chemistry because I don't have the studies pulled up, but there's actual studies of brain chemistry and, you know, dopamine releases that happen when you actually do service for another human being. And so the piece of that goes into being of service for another person, whether you are aware of it or not, I think that's what we're talking about here, is that we're connecting. And the other piece that feels so good as human beings is connecting, right? Mm-hmm. So we love having community. We love having tribe. We love having knowing that we belong somewhere. That's just human nature. And so I think that we're in an age, thankfully, that podcasts are able to reach so many people. And look at how many podcasts have popped up over the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Claire and I started when there really wasn't a lot going on in the podcast world. And now I look at it and I'm like, there's a podcast for any type of person you want to be. Mm-hmm. It's so cool because now you can feel like you belong. And I walk around and I see people with earbuds in their ears at the grocery store. And I'm like, wow, this is so cool. I think in some way people would be like, oh, you're just so disconnected from the world. But I feel like we're connected. Like, we are so connected in ways that we never could possibly imagine. So I think that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And I think it's that piece about being disconnected by having your earbuds in all the time. I think it's really about your intention. And then when you're around actual people, like, do you still have your earbuds in? Right. I try to create some rules for myself where if I'm hanging out with people, I'm disconnected from technology. But if I'm, mm-hmm. if I'm alone, then I do feel connected to, you know, different podcasts or different things like that.
Yeah. And it's so cool to take in information like that. I am always listening to something, and I try to be mindful of that too, because I think there's a balance, but I think for the most part, it just feels good to feel like you're always connected to someone out there. So I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Claire, when I was doing some research on you guys, I saw that you lived in Moab for a couple of years.
I did.
So that's one of my favorite places on the planet. We actually had our honeymoon there.
Yeah, it's the best.
So I promise this has a point, and I want your thoughts on this.
I'm happy to just shoot the shit about Moab if you want to, though. No.
While we were out there, we did a lot of really fun shit, but the one that really stuck out is we rented one of those Razors, the like really, really fast UTVs.
Mm-hmm.
And, we took it to a bunch of sand dunes and we almost flipped it and we went 85 miles an hour, did a bunch of donuts. And at the end of that day, I was like, just hit with this huge reminder of how important it is to just like do something purely for fun. And, you know, I personally am very results driven, and I always want to be productive. And so it's hard to kind of turn that side of my brain off. And so I'm wondering, what role does fun and kind of that other side, maybe that creative side of yourselves play in your lives? And what are your thoughts on kind of what I just shared?
I think it's incredibly important. I think it's the most important thing. I think that, you know, if you even go back to some of the great minds of kind of the past, like I want to say there's a Thomas Jefferson quote maybe that basically says, you know, work in the morning, but leave your afternoons open for leisure. And these days with that time is money mentality, and, you know, whether your money, that concept of money is literally money, or if it's success, or if it's PRs, or if it's whatever it is, it's so easy to just sit down in the morning and in front of your computer and then not look back up until it's, you know, time to eat or time to go to bed. And it's, but you just see people getting so worn out. And so when I lived in Moab, I was there for two summers, and I was working as a raft guide. And I worked as a raft guide for folks with disabilities. And so we had a lot of different agencies that would come through. And it was, first of all, like the practice of getting people into nature who otherwise don't really have a way to get out there. Like a lot of folks were in wheelchairs. A lot of folks, you know, just didn't have the physical ability to go for a hike, which is what's so cool about rafting, is that you can strap a wheelchair onto the back of a raft. You can have a cooler to hold somebody's medication, whatever it is. And as soon as you get on the river, everybody just becomes a completely different person. And it's, you know, I think that that concept of having fun, but, and for me, it's very much revolves around nature, but I think just like relaxing, unplugging, having fun, it allows you to be who you really are. And it's just something that we don't get anywhere else in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I've also been reminded of this a lot now that I have my little guy is almost two, and he does not care about anything other than having fun, you know? Right. And so we unfortunately can't live in that world all the time, but it does force me to like chase him around, running around screaming. Like, when was the last time that you got on all fours and chased after somebody through your living room?
Right.
You know, like it sounds ridiculous. And then at the end of it, you're panting, and the next day I'm sore, and I'm like, screw it. I don't know why I'm in the gym all the time when I could be like pretending to be a monkey and running around. I really do think that at the end of the day, like it allows us to be who we are, and it allows us to open up a side of us that otherwise has no, there's no other way to get that outlet. I think it's extremely important. And I also think it just like, why do we take ourselves so seriously all the time?
Yeah.
And
seriously.
It lets us get out of our heads and realize like that life is not so freaking serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's very important to remember.
Yeah. I was just having this conversation today with someone at work where we were talking about all the managers meetings, and I'm like, they're just so stuffy. And maybe I'm just kind of the rogue manager, but I'm like, next meeting, I'm going to go rogue, and I'm just going to start, you know, asking people what their biggest failure was this week so they can start not being so serious all the time, so we can laugh at ourselves. It's just, it's just crazy.
So on your show, we've been talking about vulnerability already. You use that term a lot. So can you explain what that means for people that aren't familiar with it, and why you place such emphasis on this?
Well, I think it kind of started when we both read a lot. I am very familiar with Brené Brown's work because I'm a therapist, and so that was kind of the big immersion. When she became popular on Oprah, and I was following her before that really surged on Oprah, but her TED Talk became very popular. And if anyone listening has not yet seen her TED Talks, highly encourage you to watch every TED Talk she's done. I believe she's done two or three, but watch any video that she's done and read her books. But that kind of became a buzzword in the therapy world. And so, but I think that really guided us with our podcast too, of just kind of being like, hey, I think there's a point. I was really inspired by podcasts where people were very real. I love biographies. I love when people tell their story and share their truth, because I think that allows us to do the same thing and gives us permission to do the same thing, and kind of saying, hey, I'm just rolling here on my back and showing you my belly. Like, right. We're all going to do this together. So I think that that's kind of the model that we both have had since we started this. And that was, you know, we credit Brené for a lot of that work, but also a lot of the podcasts that we were listening to, or I was listening to, and the blogs that I was reading before we even started this podcast, is that's what I was drawn to. And so I think that's just really important because people connect to that. You know, I think there's a time and place for reality TV when it's all shiny and pretty, and then we can kind of just zone out on the fake reality. But then there's this beauty in just being like, oh my gosh, we're all in this together. And I really wish that this was around, the podcast were around when I was, you know, first married and going through some really difficult times, that I wish I had someone to just be like, is this normal? Because I feel like now we have, you know, we want to create that for people. And it's not that we're, you know, trying so hard, but we're just trying to be, to show, hey, we're just going to be ourselves and we want everyone to show up the same. So, yeah.
And I think too, like when you think about vulnerability and for people who are not familiar with, you know, kind of the Brené Brown lexicon or aren't familiar kind of with it as more of a social movement, I think that you think of vulnerability, you think of somebody who's just like crying and breaking down in front of you, and that's uncomfortable. And, you know, it's
yeah,
like, I don't want to watch somebody have a breakdown like that. I don't know. You know, I want to be an empathetic person, but I also don't want to have a front row seat to somebody's drama, if that's what that means. But I think for us, it's less about necessarily oversharing per se, and more about just allowing ourselves to show up and be exposed in a way that hopefully kind of rides the line between, you know, because like we do have to find that balance of, a lot of people hear what we say, and a lot of those people may encounter us late, you know, in our professional lives. Like if you Google Joy's name as a therapist, one of the first things that comes up is our podcast. Or for me, like, I'm an account manager for a very large company. If you Google my name, that stuff comes up. I don't know that I necessarily, you know, want one of my clients clicking on, or my boss, or, you know, whomever clicking on my podcast and hearing that I like have had problems with sex drive. You know, like that's not necessarily what I want people to think of when they're in like a meeting with me. But I think that they're like, oh, hey. But I think though that there is that balance of finding, like, between oversharing and just being real and like not shying away from telling it like it is and talking about things that, you know, like the stuff that's on your mind. And I think for me, that's kind of what being vulnerable is just talking about the real stuff and not and I guess really it comes down to like not pretending that the stuff that's going on isn't going on.
Yeah.
Or right. Not, you know, not trying to put up this fake, like never ever trying to pretend like I'm having any experience other than the one that I'm having. And how deep I go into that, I think, varies depending on the experience and how much I'm willing to really, you know, expose some very personal things, but always trying to find like as deep as I can get without worrying about, you know, either A, having to be realistic that we do have a public platform, and B, not wanting people to be like, okay, overshare, because there is such thing as oversharing.
Right.
Yeah. And I think I want to add, like, Brené, and I'm not trying to quote this as like a Brené Brown platform here, because there's been, people have shared and been vulnerable way before she, you know, emerged with all her books. But I think she just put the words in a way that we could all relate to them very easily. But I do want to say that I do want to quote something she said that I can kind of sum up of what I think is oversharing and also just sharing your truth, is that you need to tell your story to people who deserve it. So sharing everything on Facebook to make everyone cringe is kind of like that ooh factor where you know that it's just not appropriate. So you tell your story to people who have deserved to hear your story. So I think when Claire and I are sharing more personal things on the podcast, it's because we're comfortable. We are at a place where we've gone through what we need to go through on a personal level, and then we've emerged just, okay, now I'm ready to talk about this publicly. And that is a completely different place. If we were to share things that were really difficult for us as we were going through it, and think of the same thing for you, Michael, like if you're going through something super difficult, it's not a place to talk about it in a public forum. It's after the fact when you're like, I have perspective and I have that vision where I know what happened. I can speak about it a little bit removed. I think that's what we're talking about here.
Right. First off, I thought it was hilarious on the Paleo MG podcast you did with her. You both did with her. When you realized that Brené Brown had tagged her the day before.
Oh my God, I died. Yeah. I was freaking out.
You had
I loved
the biggest
you.
Fan
we always
moment.
Have so much fun with her.
That was so,
oh, yeah.
Funny. Oh, yeah. Joy was laying beside herself.
And Julie's sitting there.
Julie had no idea.
She had no idea. She's like, and of course, I'm just geeking out. I'm like, Julie, you have to watch your TED Talks right now.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, I totally agree. I think when most people hear the word vulnerability, they think of things like your podcast or things like people making these social media posts that are seen as vulnerable, and they say, you know, I can never do that. I don't have that kind of strength or whatever. But it's really, vulnerability is involved in every single one of our relationships, from the smallest little things. And I think, Claire, you said it really well, is it's as simple as just saying the things that you haven't been saying, right? It can be something very small, and it's kind of the being vulnerable is the like brickwork of building trust. And you start really small, and then you can, you know, let go of bigger and bigger things, and before you know it, you have this very solid foundation of a relationship.
Michael, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So how comfortable are you with asking people for help?
I would say very comfortable.
Okay, good. Because the point I'm making with this is, I also heard Brené, gosh, I'm just going to go with it. Like, this is just going to be a Brené episode. But
well, we've talked about her on here for a dozen times, so it's good.
Yeah, I remember her in an interview saying, if you have difficulty asking for help and you're one of those people that's like, oh, I just don't need help, or I myself cannot ask for help because I just feel so guilty, or I just don't want to, you know, I feel like I can do it on my own. You need to realize that if you cannot accept help and you are, you know, trying to do it on your own and struggling through it, then you actually judge other people, whether you know it or not, you judge other people for asking for help. So just everyone chew on that.
Ooh. Damn. That's
a truth bomb.
Yeah, that's
a
really
truth bomb.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
And that one hit me in the face. Yeah.
That's really cool. If you have a family member or a friend that seems really walled off and protecting themselves from being vulnerable, what's a good strategy for helping them out of it? Or is that something you should help people with at all?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that it's so much just about, with anything, in my personal opinion, that you just have to walk the walk. So pushing or quote unquote trying to get anyone to do anything is really just, it's not going to work. So I would say, yes, I do have those people in my life. And what I do is I try to be as vulnerable in an appropriate way, of course, but really open myself. I'm thinking of one person in particular in my life where I know how much this person struggles. And so whenever I have an interaction with this person, I try to just be very like, oh my gosh, this podcast really helped me with depression, or when I was feeling super anxious, this helped me. And I love how they, you know, this take on blah, blah, blah. And I really tried to just use myself as like an example to kind of just get them to see like, hey, you're not alone, without me being like, what's wrong? Why are you so sad? Like, that's just not going to work. But, you know, I think the biggest flaw that we do as humans is that we don't reach out to people when they're hurting, and we don't know what to say, and we don't know, you know, if we're going to say something wrong. But honestly, you know, I just had one of my greatest friends just lost her mother. And the first thing that came to my mind was, oh my gosh, I just don't know what to say. I'm really struggling to call her, but I just dialed her number. And you know what? The first thing she said was, she like cracked a joke, and we just started cracking up because like, that's her personality. Like, she cracked a joke like that, you know, it's too personal to say it, but it was just more or less like, you know, holy shit, I'm going through this really difficult time, and like cracked a joke. And we both just started cracking up because that's the relationship we have. But you know, it's just that, even, you know, me, who I feel like I know a lot about the human psyche, is just, I had a difficult time calling this person who's very close to me to be like, I just don't know what I'm going to say. But I think the piece that we need to realize, especially if we're like, we see someone hurting, is like, you don't have to have the right answer. You just have to connect. You just have to reach out, you know, like, that's all that needs to happen.
Adi and I took the Landmark Forum recently. And what I loved most about that experience was the emphasis on taking action, like, immediately. So there were these, you know, a few instances in both of our lives where we just weren't, we were kind of holding something in, and we'd been doing that. Like me personally, I'd been holding this kind of slight resentment for a long time. And I was just afraid of what the person would say if I brought it up and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, at the forum, they encouraged me to just get it out. And I called the person up, and just by being vulnerable and telling them about my feelings, like instantly it went away and we were able to become closer. Right. So, I mean, it's such a vital part of relationships that I think so many people are missing.
Well, I think the other piece that I'll add just to tie this up is just so much of what we do in our lives is made up in our head, and mm-hmm. it's just not true. I live that every single day. I think, oh gosh, I don't want to do this today. Or, you know, I do the procrastination thing where I have to flip it on its head. And I'm like, look, Joy, anytime that you've made a big deal about a task that you've had to do, it really is like 20% size of what you actually thought it was going to be. So even it, that goes for relationships, that goes for, you know, fill in the blank, but especially with our partners, of being like, okay, so-and-so's thinking this about me. I wonder if they hate me today, or if I said the wrong thing. And it's all in our head. And it's so funny how we make it so big, but if we actually just say it out of our mouths, it's so different. Mm-hmm.
So when you guys first started the podcast, what was it like from a kind of confidence standpoint? Were you totally unafraid? Were you afraid? And if you did have some fear, how did you get past that? How did you continue to show up despite that?
I think that Joy and I both are a little bit. We're definitely both the type of people who are a little pretty unapologetic and are kind of just like, we're here, this is what we're talking about. If you don't like us, then, you know, you can deal with it. And, you know, that's not always the best attitude to have in life. I think I know that it's definitely gotten us into trouble in other areas of our life. But I think with this podcast, just from day one, we really owned it. And I think that, first of all, that's let it become what it is. But I think also going back to the fact that, like, also from day one, we haven't had to worry about doing this for anyone but ourselves. And it's always just been like, we're here to have fun, and the day it stops being fun is the day we'll stop doing the podcast. And so having that motivation behind us has really just made it flow. And I mean, we've definitely had times where, you know, if we're interviewing somebody who's a really big name, or, you know, if we, like we were talking before we hit record about the in-person live podcast that we did with about 100 or so people, and those types of moments, we do definitely have those moments of doubt of like, who are we to, you know, be sitting down with the founder of CrossFit, or who are we to, you know, whatever that fill in the blank. But I think by and large, when we first got started, first of all, you know, we had like 5 listeners. And so that was helpful. It's not like we started with this huge international platform. Literally, right. Literally my mom to this day listens to my podcast. But,
hi, Carol.
Hi, Mom. But I think like just knowing that, and, you know, the fact that it has just grown so organically that we've been able to grow with it. It's just been very organic the whole time, which we're definitely lucky that that's been the case.
Yeah. I would add to that, that as far as the fear part, because we didn't really have any idea that anyone was really listening. Right. I think we just felt like we're just talking to ourselves in a room and we're having a conversation. But the other piece that I say all the time is I really feel like our dynamic is a match made in heaven. Like there's no way that I would be able to do this with another person. Mm-hmm. And that's the other piece, is like Claire's more or less like my security blanket in a way. Like if we were doing something, like I know that there's ways that she will show up to the podcast that I can't, and vice versa. And so it's like there, if I was to just all of a sudden have to go this alone, I think it'd be a completely different story. Like we recently did a whole 30, like mini episodes, because we both did a whole 30 together. And so we did daily recordings of our journey. And so we kind of put like mini episodes up every day, but we had the recordings separate. So Claire would record on her phone, I would record on my phone, and then I'd splice the tracks together. But I just remember thinking like, this is so lonely. I would never want to just do something like where I'm talking to myself. You know, but the only time I don't think there's so much a fear as it is you know, we're constantly hoping that we can keep this growing. So, right. Yeah.
Well, I'm really jealous because when I started, I can't remember anything that I've been more afraid of. I was just literally.
Well, I remember that when you guys
first,
when you were on our show, you talked about how you're like, you hate public speaking, but do you feel a little bit different because like this isn't so much public speaking? Cause you're just like in a room, there's not people staring at you.
Well, now I do, but it's very, it's like whatever you practice, you're going to become more confident in. And you know, at first I felt so, you know, like that whole idea of like, who am I to be doing this, having these conversations with these people, et cetera, et cetera. And I just felt just so out of place. And it wasn't until I really got in there and learned like it's really just a conversation that I was able to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Can you remember maybe?
I think the other thing that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the other thing that saved us is that Joy and I didn't really know each other before our conversations have grown. So we didn't just dive in either. So that was helpful.
No way. That's very interesting. That's cool.
Yeah.
Can you remember maybe the biggest mistake or embarrassing moment that you've had throughout all of the 209 episodes that you're willing to share?
Oh gosh, I don't know if, I mean, I'm such a freak about our audio sound that I mean, it's like a one man show over here. Like we both do, you know, Claire does a lot of the writing and social media and I do a lot of the editing. So it's kind of like, I mean, I just put so much pressure now that we are growing even more to make it look really good and to make it sound really good. And so there's times where, you know, I'll wake up at, you know, when I'm going to the gym and I'll start listening to, I always listen to the episode and I edit the episode real time. Right. But then there's some times when like after I load it, technology just takes a dump. And then like, I'll be listening to it on the way to the gym and I'll be like, no, that's not what it's supposed to sound like.
Right.
And that kind of freaks me out and I stress over it like all day. But of course everyone's like so forgiving and like, it's okay. It's fine. But like, there's a couple times with like technical glitches, but as far as like embarrassing moment, I mean, when we interviewed Greg Glassman, I was just like so nervous that I just focused on our sound the entire time. I'd love to go back and interview him where we have like a sound guy where I don't have to be the person taking responsible for that. So I can just like not stress about it. But other than that, I feel like we've just had such good juju with this whole endeavor.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Apart from the time that we recorded like a 2-hour long episode with Sam Dancer and then didn't save it.
No,
that was bad. Well, yeah, it just like dumped. Something happened and my computer just froze.
Brandon, sorry. Joy had just gotten a brand new computer and like in the middle of it, it just kind of took a dump. And so, yeah, apart from losing the Sam Dancer episode, I'm just not sure that I hope that I wasn't like being awkward and everyone else was like, oh my God, Claire, you're so awkward. You should be embarrassed. And I was just like, la, la, la. If that happened, then great. Cause ignorance is bliss, I guess.
Of all your guests, which one do you think has impacted you the most? And then what did he or she say that had that effect on you?
Okay, I'm going to go really quick because this just popped in my head because I quote her all the freaking time, is that when we had Nicole Christensen on from CrossFit Roots in Boulder, Colorado. Nicole Christensen was at my house here and we were recording and this was kind of like way before I even started macro counting and I joined WAG and I was really into this horrible cycle of like working out. Claire and I talk a lot about this. If you guys, if listeners want to check out our podcast, we talked so much about how your food should not be in exchange for exercise. Like it's not a transactional relationship. So you shouldn't work out to eat. And so I just remember Nicole Christensen, we were talking about the whole rest days thing and that whole, all the memes were popping up about like, you know, beast mode every day and like work hard and make sure you're sweating every day and go all out every single day. And everyone was just freaking out if they had a rest day. And Nicole Christensen was like, okay, rest days, you know, if people are freaking out about rest days, it just means that your diet isn't dialed in. And that for like that was just kind of like a ding aha moment for me, because I realized that I was in this horrible dysfunctional relationship with food and exercise, mm-hmm. and that I didn't have my diet dialed in. And then that's kind of when I started the journey of like starting to track macros and really just pay attention to what food was doing and nourishing and what was in food. And I'd never done it. And there's kind of like a whole backstory on that. But that forever has been like a huge pivotal moment for me in the podcasting realm.
That's huge. That's huge, because that's
huge.
That,
oh, that, yeah.
That's rampant in men and women, in all of sports in general. That's a huge lesson. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it was just so, I mean, ever since then, I've just been like, oh, I have such a different outlook. I mean, it took me a while, to be fair. I mean, like, it took me a while to really get what that meant, but that mm-hmm. planted a seed that so strongly now influences my life, where I'm like, oh, it just feels so good. And I have no pressure to go run 10 miles because I want to have a piece of cake. Right. Like, give me a freaking break.
Right. That is awesome. How about you, Claire?
I don't know if I don't have a moment that like stands out like that with Joy. I, in general, one of the big differences between me and Joy is that I'm a much like kind of bigger picture type of thinker. Mm-hmm. And you know, so for me though, I think it's just been interviews where in the moment that, you know, whatever it is that I'm like dealing with that day or that week or that season, if I can connect with somebody who just normalizes my experience. And I think the biggest thing I've taken away bigger picture from all of the impactful interviews I feel like I've done is kind of goes back to the first question I answered, which was that these people who I look at and think like, man, that person's so successful, 99% of the time, they never set out to do the thing that they've accomplished, and certainly not in the way that they thought that they would. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, for me, been the biggest takeaway and the biggest aha moment has always come from something like that, of like, wow, I would look at this person, whether they're a successful gym owner or a successful, you know, successful athlete or whatnot, and to hear them just constantly say in one way or another, like, this is never what I set out to do. And if you had asked me 10 years ago, if, you know, if I had ended up in the place that I wanted to be 10 years ago, I would be totally unhappy. For me, like, when we started this podcast, I was 25. And so as we've been I'm 29 now. So as we've been going through this, you know, it's been some pretty transformational years, and some, you know, I think your late 20s are some of the toughest years. And so to constantly have that reminder of people week by week of saying, like, whether they're older than younger than me, whether they've achieved, you know, whatever they've achieved, just to have that touch point of like, even the most successful people don't have their shit together every day. And in fact, none of them do, has been so amazing. And that's definitely the biggest lesson I've learned.
Yeah. As often as possible, I actually try to draw that out of people on the show so that others can see that, because that's the most freeing, like, empowering idea, that I've also gotten from doing all of my podcasts, right? All of these successful people, they go through all of the same, feelings of self-doubt and fear and lack of motivation on certain days, etc., but they just continue to try and get better and continue to put in the work. It's just such a great feeling.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're all just freaking humans trying to be better every single right. day, and we all like fuck up every day, and it's just like, if we could take some humor in that, I think that we will all just get along, we'll all be happier. I mean, just stop trying to be so perfect all the dang time. Mm-hmm.
I'll share one that sticks out for me that I think both of you will love. It was it was on my podcast with John Berardi, the owner of Precision Nutrition. He said, and they've worked with, I think he said over 60,000 people. I don't know, many, many thousands of clients. And he said that the very first two things that they teach every single client is, one, to eat slower. So they've, you know, to practice mindful eating, and then two is to eat to 80% fullness. So the first one, eating mindfully, it allows you to find more enjoyment out of your food, actually taste it. It allows you to, allows the hormones of satiety to set in, so you actually feel full. And then this concept of eating to 80% fullness, for me, like, I've been programmed to eat to like absolute 120% fullness at all times, right? I have like a hole that I have to fill or I'm unhappy. I have to be completely full or I'm not like satisfied. And so just like allowing myself not to reach that point during every meal has been like earth shattering to me. And I still have so much growth to do in this, but focusing on those two things as often as I can has been really, really transformational for me, as simple as both of those are. And so to hear that, to hear it from him, you know, as credible as he is, was just such a huge lesson for me. I thought it was amazing.
Oh, that's great.
What is one thing about you both that you wish more people knew about you?
I don't know why I'm laughing.
That's a great question.
I think I'm laughing because I'm like, wow, the things that just flew through my mind in 0.2 seconds.
Okay, Joy, I would love to know what just flew through your mind because I am like, beep, like nothing. I got nothing.
Well, the things that were going through my head was like, you're a big nerd. You like so many 80s movies. Like, you really just live in like a complete different universe. I am a massive introvert. Oh my God, it's so funny. Like, but what I wish people knew more about me is that, oh my gosh, that I really care so deeply. I kind of have like this massive bleeding heart. And even though I joke a lot on the podcast and I'm kind of come across as like this, I can be like a little bit rigid sometimes. And like, I'm very type A, but I have a huge bleeding heart. And, I think that's just very apparent that I do that in my day job and I care so much about people and I want to help people, but I think people know that about me, but it's just, I think sometimes I kind of have this like shortness about me that doesn't come across as like very nice. So I think people are more afraid to approach me when they see me out in public or whenever we're doing events and they're like, oh, hi. And they're afraid to say hi. But yeah, I think, I don't know if that's totally answers your question, but that was the first thing.
I'm sitting here like thinking the complete opposite. I guess I haven't listened to enough shows or anything to hear shortness.
Like maybe that's just because in my head I'm always rethinking. Like, it's funny because you said that, Michael, because sometimes I'll listen to a podcast and I'll be like, I can hear what was going through my head when I was talking, but it doesn't come across that like actually in the recording, which is such a weird thing because I know when I'm saying things, I'm like, oh my gosh, I know what's going through my head when I'm saying them, but it doesn't come across that way. So, but I think there's times when, you know, then it does, I can be a little more blunt and I'm like, no, but really I care so much about you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You may find this interesting, but that, what you said, like that you have this bleeding heart, like really comes across in the way that you speak and the way that you interview and everything. It really does.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Claire, you, are you too big picture for this?
I'm like, no, Claire's... I think that my answer is like pretty big picture. Like, I think the thing that I want people to know is that I'm always trying as hard as I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the thing that's tough about that for me is having to accept over the course of my life that amount of effort looks different from stage to stage and from thing to thing. And especially having, you know, since becoming a mom, my 100% effort looks completely different than it did before I had kids. It looks completely different than it did before I was married, than when I was in school, whatever it is. And I tend to really compare myself to past versions of myself and think like, man, I used to be able to get to the gym so much more, or I used to be able to whatever XYZ. The reason I can't still do that must just be because I'm not trying hard enough.
Right.
And because that's the thing that I tell myself, that is what I automatically assume other people are thinking of me. And so I think, you know, when you were on our podcast, Michael, we talked about like what our insecurities are. And mine was, I am very insecure about not being taken seriously. And I think that that's a huge part of it, is that I assume that people, that like, if I, you know, am am a human and drop the ball or forget a detail or whatever, like I hold myself to such a high standard that I think that if I mess up in any sort of way that people automatically just assume that I'm not trying. Mm-hmm. And so that I think is, you know, whether or not that actually comes across, you know, I'm sure it probably comes across more than I think it does. But that is just a thing that I always want people to know is like, no, like even if I, you know, if you want to like look at it in the lens of the podcast, even if I don't reply to your email right away, or if I don't, you know, answer your question that you asked on a podcast and you want to know more about my experience with something and I don't get your question, like I'm thinking about it and I'm, you know, constantly trying to improve everything that I do. And I hope that comes through, but if it doesn't, like I think that, all you can do is expect someone to try as hard as they can. And I always want people to know that, like, I'm trying as hard as I can.
I can completely relate to that. And I think we really just have 100% to give to our life in general, but we can't give 100% to every different thing in our lives. And it kind of sounds like you're saying a little bit of that, right? Like you have, now you have a kid, so you have a total new responsibility that you have to put so much effort and energy into. And so you can't put the same amount of energy into the gym or maybe career or whatever it is, but it doesn't mean you're trying less in your life, right? You're just picking it up somewhere else.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that I referenced our conversation with Sheree Chan already, but, one of the things that she also said was like, you have multiple buckets in your life and we tend to get into these phases where you only focus on one bucket at a time. But for her, you know, getting into her 40s and really like taking the time to prioritize her life has looked like finally focusing on all the different buckets. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that's kind of more what I'm trying to do, and also kind of more, you know, and I guess I just hope that other people see that. And like I said, like, I think the standard that I try to hold people to is like, I could care less what you accomplish. I just want to see that you're trying.
Right.
And, you know, so that's the thing that I hope also comes across.
Awesome. That's a great answer. Do you ladies have anything else you want to leave these listeners with?
Just take a breath, everybody, and have some fun.
Have some damn fun.
Just take a breath. Just have some damn fun and take a breath. We always kind of make fun of ourselves in that way. And I think that if you can do that every single day, it just does. It makes life so much easier. And go do something for someone else. I truly believe in service every single day.
Awesome.
Ladies, yeah, I think mine goes along with that. Like, you're not that busy and important. Just.
Yeah. You're really not.
I love it.
You know what else I think? I'm going to say one more thing is that when you're driving and if you have like road rage to someone, just pretend like it's your grandma or it's your parents, because you never know. It's like some old person driving and they're getting mad at your grandma. Like, you just be nice.
You just got mad just at your grandma.
Nice. You just got I mad love at your grandma. How specific that was.
Yeah.
Just one last thing that's been on my mind. Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Guys, thank y'all so much. For all you listening, please check out the Girls Gone Wild podcast. They've had some incredible guests as well as amazing conversations with just the two of them. And there's lots to choose from. 209 episodes.
You can find it some with everywhere. You and Adi.
Yep. Yeah, we were on there together. Adi's been on there, I don't know, gosh, half dozen times by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go check them out. Thank you all so much again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a blast.